Hello, I'm Lina Ahmadou. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will discuss vaccination. World Immunization Week is held every year in the last week of April to emphasize the collective action needed to protect people from vaccine-preventable diseases. Africa Vaccination Week is also commemorated at the same time in April to advocate for stronger and more effective vaccine delivery systems across the continent. According to the World Health Organization, immunization prevents up to 5 million deaths a year from diseases like diphtheria, tetanus, and measles. UNICEF reports that at least 20 million children missed life-saving vaccines in 2022, which is 2.1 million more than 2019. But there is good news, such as the new simplified cholera vaccine approved by WHO. The international health body says the new vaccine should allow larger volumes of the serum to be produced faster and reach more children where needed. Tuesday, April 30th marks the last day of Africa Vaccination Week and World Immunization Week. I spoke with Tabani Maposa, Gavi's Managing Director of Country Programs Delivery, to discuss progress made on the vaccination front and some remaining challenges.
Gavi and UNICEF have approved a new simplified and efficient oral cholera vaccine. Now, what is the significance of the approval of the new UVCOL-S vaccine, particularly in the context of the recent increase in cholera outbreaks globally?
Thank you. We welcome the pre-qualification of this new product by the World Health Organization that obviously is responsible for that part of our work. Gavi only buys vaccines that are pre-qualified by WHO. And it comes at an extremely important time. We have had a demand for cholera vaccines surging in a significant way. Our global stockpile has increased, and so it means we'll have more vaccines. I think the significance really is where we are from a time perspective, that in no time in history have we had such large and significant cholera outbreaks as we do now. And so another vaccine and an increase in supply really means we are well poised to begin our plans to move towards preventative campaigns or preventative programs. We are not there yet because of the demand that has been surpassing supply.
Now, with the increase of the global oral cholera vaccine stockpile by 12 million doses in 2024, how will this expansion enhance the global capacity to control cholera outbreaks and also improve preparedness for future incidents?
No, thank you. As I said, cholera has been surging globally since 2021, and some of that may be associated with climate change in terms of what we've seen in terms of the unprecedented large number of outbreaks. We saw them, if you remember, in Pakistan, but we saw them in Southern Africa, but we've seen them also in Ethiopia and DRC. There are some endemic places. The supply has increased 18-fold since 2013. In the last over 10 years, or just over 10 years, it's been increasing 18 times, and it hasn't caught up with the demand yet fully, which shows that it's an important investment relative to the disease that we are dealing with. The approval means that we can increase the procurement and push back harder on this deadly disease. But where we really want to be is a situation where we are actually responding preventatively, which really will reduce the burden of what we need to deal with. Let me give you a small example. In Mozambique, for example, we very much know that there are some regions where it can be predicted that malaria, not malaria, sorry, cholera, is going to be coming. And in those regions, if we actually gave two doses of vaccines, we would actually reduce the impact of the cholera outbreaks. But because of the supply challenges, we are only giving one dose, which is really has a time-limited immunity around it. So if we shifted supply, we can actually shift to two doses instead of one and have a longer protection period.
That's fantastic. Now, what steps are being taken to ensure equitable access to UVCOL-S for countries in need, particularly those facing the highest burden of cholera outbreak? We've seen in the past that vaccine access has been a problem for some countries, especially coming out of COVID. So what is being done?
Well, I think equity is at the heart of the Gavi mission, as you know. And so that means that as we think about our countries in totality, we really try to match our supply to the demand. But we also really try to understand the epidemiology or the disease burden in these countries. And in that regard, we try to prioritize those countries that are at high risk. And I just named DRC. It is one of those countries that is in that space. And then there is Mozambique, of course. So the distribution is tied to the high incident and disease burden zones before it goes more general.
In the process of ensuring that countries have the vaccines they need, what is the contribution in the process in terms of per financial or logistics? How does this dynamic work?
At the moment, Gavi really provides a lot of the costs for the global surge vaccines to make sure that they are delivered. But we must always remember, I've said this to you probably before, the one contribution that is underestimated that countries give is its health workforce. Vaccines don't deliver themselves. And the health workforce is always paid for by the government that we actually leverage. So while vaccines are important, they are not the full picture. The full picture is also the health workforce and the community demand that needs to be worked on.
Now let's move to a different topic, which is HPV. Looking at cervical cancer as a big picture. Gavi is working with the Tanzanian government currently to launch a nationwide HPV vaccine campaign to prevent cervical cancer in the country, among other things. Can you provide more insight on this initiative?
So thank you very much. Maybe let me just tell you how excited I am about this, because the number of girls that will be protected and that Tanzania is projecting to protect is about 5 million of 9 to 14-year-old girls. And I can tell you that this is the number of future cancer cases, cervical cancer, averted. If we are able to come anywhere close to that number. Tanzania as a country has more than 10,800 cases. And of these, in 2022 alone, if you can imagine, we lost, unfortunately, 6,800 people. And this is women. And quite often, these may be mothers. And you can imagine the children that are left orphaned. So this vaccine excites me because it really is about protecting the mother, but it is also about protecting a family. It is about protecting a girl, but it is also about protecting her future family as well. So I get very excited with what we are doing in Tanzania. The thing that is also important about this vaccine is that we have moved to a single dose. So meaning that we can reach more girls than we would have if we were using two doses as in the past.
And is the single dose as efficient as the two doses?
It has, and it took a while for the scientific studies to approve that, and we would not have moved in this direction if we're not sure. And so the technical studies tell us that it is effective, and we are glad that it has actually freed more vaccines for more children.
What specific impact do you anticipate this campaign will have on the health of outcomes of young girls in Tanzania and on public health as a whole?
Well, the HPV vaccine is amongst the highest impact of all Gavi-supported vaccines. 17.4 deaths are averted per 1,000 children, really placing it on top. So following this multi-age campaign, which is the multi-age, the 9 to 14 years age, we will continue to provide with 9-year-old girls through a routine program with vaccines. And so this is the beginning and the reset of making sure that more girls are protected in the coming years in Tanzania. But Gavi has a target of reaching 86 million girls by 2025, and this is an important part of the revitalization of our HPV program, and we want to reach them through schools, but we also want to reach girls out of school as well. So in the African Vaccination Week, we hope that this will be part of the priorities.
Africa Vaccination Week and World Immunization Week take place at the same time every year at the end of the month of April. What are some of the key achievements or milestones in the field of immunization that should be highlighted?
The first one is that in the last 50 years, 6 lives have been saved every minute with vaccination. But the second one is that in the last 23 years, Gavi has been part of the story, and it has been vaccinating half of the world's children. And it has reached 1 billion children that have been vaccinated, and we are still counting. And so I can tell you that there has been no better investment in development in terms of return as vaccination. And it is the backbone of the primary health system as well.
So what is your message as African Vaccination Week ends this year?
Well, in Africa, I can say that an estimated 51.2 million lives have been saved through vaccine in the past 50 years, meaning that in each year we've been saving maybe roughly on average 1 million lives. But I should argue that we can do more. There is more that can be done. I think we just have a meningococcal vaccine for the meningitis belt. And this is going to protect with the 5 serotypes. We used to have one that was protecting 1 serotype. It means that the health benefits are just going to multiply in a significant way. But I'll say that the message is both for Africa, but also beyond Africa. The investment in vaccines is one that should be sustained. As we go towards replenishment, we must actually recognize that the investment in Gavi has been the best buy for money. But we must also recognize that countries have put their own money. Just in 2023, 215 million of domestic financing has come through as part of their country's contribution towards immunization. And it must be recognized as a very important contribution. Then you and I, the last time we spoke, we were speaking about malaria. I'm telling you, I'm still excited for our continent because malaria is the number one killer. And if it has killed anywhere in a huge way, it has been in Africa. And help is on the way. And Africa must stand up and take up that vaccine and use it as effectively as it can.
And to following what you are saying, vaccines against malaria, R21, Mosquirix are being utilized on the continent. Your final thoughts with that?
I mean, we have 35 African countries that are ready to, that we are working with, that are ready to introduce the malaria vaccines. Since the last time we spoke, I think we've seen a few more countries coming on board. I think we are on track to make sure that we are utilizing as much of the vaccines that are there in the high-risk areas of those countries.
Thabani Maphosa, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Lina.
That was Thabani Maphosa, Gavi's Managing Director of Country Programs Delivery. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. We'll have more on what is being done in Africa with regards to vaccination in a moment. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
Welcome back to Health Chat. Three more African countries have joined the rollout of malaria vaccines targeting millions of children on the continent, which accounts for 95% of malaria deaths, according to the United Nations. Benin, Liberia, and Sierra Leone are offering the malaria vaccine as part of their childhood immunization programs. Two vaccines, RTSS and R21, recommended by WHO, have been seen as a breakthrough for child health and malaria control. It followed similar rollouts in Ghana, Cameroon, Malawi, Kenya, and Burkina Faso. Sierra Leone's health minister is expressing confidence in the sharp reduction in malaria rates among the population. Dr. Austin Demby says the government in Sierra Leone is working closely with the WHO, UNICEF, and the Global Vaccine Alliance in a program towards malaria prevention in the West African country. For more on expectations and how Sierra Leoneans are reacting to the program since its launch, VOA's Peter Clarty reached Health Minister Dr. Austin Demby.
Well, the vaccine was launched on the 25th of this month, which happens to be World Malaria Day. And it was just one of the most exciting things that has happened in Sierra Leone. The president himself launched the program. And for us, malaria being one of the biggest killers in our country, having this malaria vaccine, particularly targeted at children, gives us an incredible, incredible new tool in our arsenal in the fight against malaria. Again, this is done in conjunction with the insecticide-treated bed nets. We just ordered about 5 million bed nets in the country. We're also aggressively looking at insect control. We're also aggressively looking at rapid diagnosis and treatment. I think a combination of all of these and this new tool we have with the vaccine, we think that we'll have a really major delta, a major change in the malaria rates in our country.
How are they reacting to this malaria vaccine program? How have they embraced it? Talk to me about the experience of it.
I think people are really excited. I mean, malaria impacts every facet of our lives in Sierra Leone. And so people are very, very excited at the opportunity that this presents. I know in some countries, people have vaccine hesitancy. But we have nothing like that in Sierra Leone when it comes to malaria. We spent the last year preparing the public for this, explaining to people how effective this vaccine is, how safe this vaccine is. And we have no problem whatsoever with everybody all through the country lining up to get the vaccines.
You know, there are some misconceptions that some of these vaccines are a Trojan horse to gather information from Africans or to cause harm to Africans. How are you reacting to such misconceptions or misinformation?
I think that you're very, very right. Those are clear misconceptions and misinformation. What we have is a thorough scientific group in Sierra Leone that has looked at this vaccine, has looked at the data all through. We know the actual content of the vaccine itself. We know that the efficacy and the safety of it has been evaluated in multiple studies. We're also ensuring that as this vaccine is instituted, that we have the safeguards to ensure that any adverse event is quickly detected and managed. So again, we as a nation are very conscious of the importance of vaccines, and I think we've had very good Ebola vaccines deployed. We've had a very good COVID vaccines deployed in Sierra Leone effectively. We have even newer vaccines like the HPV vaccine deployed in Sierra Leone, and we have a health workforce that has a relationship with the public. And the public trusts the health workforce in ensuring that these vaccines are safe and efficacious before they ever brought into the country.
What are your expectations of this malaria vaccine program? What do you expect for it to achieve before it's ended?
Well, it's not ending as such. You know, we're introducing this vaccine into our routine immunization program. What we expect is by using this vaccine and combining it with other countermeasures, such that the bed nets, such that the insect control efforts, such that the diagnosis and treatment, we hope that we will change dramatically the morbidity and mortality associated with malaria in Sierra Leone. And we're going into the rainy season now, which is a peak period for malaria transmission. We hope that as we introduce this new vaccine, 550,000 doses that we're introducing right now of the 1.7 million doses, we hope that as we bring this in, you will see that the number of malaria rates throughout the rainy season is reduced considerably. And we're targeting children right now. But hopefully, as this program evolves, we'll expand the coverage of this vaccine. So we expect to see a much, 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 much steeper drop in the malaria rates this year and in subsequent years.
That was Sierra Leone's Health Minister, Dr. Austin Demby, speaking to my colleague Peter Cloti. Namibia is recognized as one of the few African nations to reach continental health targets outlined in the Abuja Declaration, allocating at least 15% of its national budget to health. Despite that progress, the country is struggling with its planned rollout of the human papillomavirus vaccine, HPV, which was set to begin in April. Vitalio Angula has more from Windhoek.
Over the years, Namibia's government has dedicated a sizable portion of its budget to health and social services, with the proportion increasing over the years. This has not, however, always translated into improved health delivery, as seen in the delayed rollout of vaccinations for human papillomavirus, or HPV, which causes an estimated 90% of cervical cancers in women. Namibia's Minister of Health and Social Services, Kalumbi Shangula, told VOA Wednesday the country is on track with a mass immunization of adolescent girls and is simply figuring out the logistics. But he also highlighted Namibia's upper middle income classification by the World Economic Forum as a barrier to health funding in the country.
We are convinced that the basis the basis for Mehi is not sour, because for you, the denominator is the population. Because you know the population in Namibia is small. The smaller the denominator, the higher the product. But we have many countries, maybe if you, those one with 50 million, who are in a similar situation like Namibia, but they are the least developed country.
Namibia's cabinet last month charged Peer Mushalenga, Minister of International Relations and Cooperation, with lobbying other middle-income countries at forums such as the World Bank and United Nations to put direct pressure on Bretton Woods institutions to adopt the United Nations Development Programme Multidimensional Poverty Index as a more accurate determinant of a country's developmental status. The government believes the lower ranking is a more accurate indication of the country's development profile and will help it obtain loans and grants to aid its development programs.
Because of historical injustices of the colonial past, now the disadvantages, therefore, is that we are unable to access soft loans, as I was saying, and credits that are normally reserved for lower middle income countries. And it's
of the middle income status as a barrier to delivering healthcare by pointing out how local middlemen, known as tenderpreneurs, have become instant millionaires through government procurement of essential health services and products, which does not translate to healthcare gains for the public. Wade Henkert, a political scientist and lecturer at a local university, says Namibia's upper middle income status has the advantage of giving Namibia access to international capital financial markets and potential foreign direct investment, which is good for development.
The delay in rolling out the HPV vaccine in Namibia continues to highlight the challenges that the country faces in procuring vaccines and also providing essential healthcare services. While a downgrade in ranking may potentially make Namibia eligible for grants from organizations like GAVI, G-A-V-I, it is essential to consider that the broader implications of such a decision could also deter investor confidence in the country.
Henkert says tenderpreneurship, while widespread in Africa, is exploited to an unusual degree in Namibia because of loopholes in procurement that make it lucrative for opportunistic business people to take advantage of Namibia's healthcare procurement system. Macroeconomic factors such as the reported slowdown in production by one of the leaders in HBV vaccine production, Merck, could be a variable hurting Namibia's rollout of HBV vaccines, although VOA could not independently verify this. Vitalio Angula, VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
And that is all for this edition of Health Chat. Thank you all for joining us, and thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linoch Mudo in Washington, with producer Nabil Biagio. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.